Sing the Let's Go, a weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, by the Mighty the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 8th of March to the 14th of March, 2021. More importantly, I've had my first vaccination.
Hey,
let's find out whether the side effects kick in as we're recording this podcast.
Oh, I see you mutate live on air.
They give you a massive list of them. Most of them were just cold and flu symptoms.
Cheating factor, a little bit of a athlete, you know, all the usual stuff.
Obviously, there is a solitary exception to these things which happened in the past week, and that is Vlad Love, episode 5, Daddy Came.
Is that more leading than this episode's name, or, like, less leading? I'm not fucking sure.
It's
like,
just the fucking way that the word daddy has been co-opted by various groups over the preceding decades, you know.
True, but I feel like this is more... if any show is going to lean into that, it's going to be this show, right?
And I mean, to be fair, as Bamba says himself, you gotta come and see the super rare dad.
Top tier daddies here, yeah.
So, but before we get to the daddies, we get to the bit where all the cast decide that they're going to be responsible for Mai's safety and upbringing to the extent that the school doctor is going to open the school up at night to start night school.
And again, it seems like it's like, oh, I didn't know that we did night schools for like working people and that kind of stuff. It's like, we do now.
brand new program. I'm starting.
And it's a long story. Mm. They're like, please make it short this time. And it turns out this long story is the scene out of Basic Instinct where she crosses and uncrosses her legs. It works, but it takes a long time to get to that.
We have to make so many references to so many other movies in the meantime.
And people, all sorts of things where I should really, if I had the time, I'd have paused and looked up some of these people.
God, it would have taken you a while.
There's a particular actor, a particular author, there's lots of them in there. You know, they're getting really dense and out there with their referencing, but that's what Vlad Love is. You're into it or you're not.
Yeah.
But it's a weird show where it also expects you not to get the references, and that's why they pause to explain the references at places of like, who is this guy? How have you not heard of this guy? He's a politician, but he's also been in all these movies.
I also like the fact they were referencing so fucking, like, with deep cuts that one character mistakes is like, oh, that's that famous actor. It's like, no, that's a different person. I was referring to this other guy.
Going to your IMDb pages and someone's like, no, it's this actor. He was in this film. He's nobody doing this kind of character.
Good stuff.
And then the second part of the episode is that Mai's dad shows up, Gilda Ray, another one for my top anime Gilda Rays. That eventually there'll be enough to do a panel on. It's weird that he's like, he's just basically taken some of the syllables and squashed them into another part of the name. But then when the second dad shows up, Bamba's own dad, he then like makes it clear that he is Gilda Ray and he's just pretending not to be Gilda Ray by changing his name to a name which is pronounced exactly the same.
But I mean, like, in his legal document on his passport, it won't look, it's like, no, I'm not look, check it out. It's like, oh, that is a different name. Yeah, you're fine.
My name is not Dick Small, it's Richard Small, all right? That's what passport says.
Deal with the first dad first is the teacher wants to get a sample of his blood, and that's kind of the other running gag for the rest of the episode is that that we have a vampire who is afraid of needles and having his blood drained.
So it's all like, oh, it's all great when you do it to somebody else, when you're just stalking into their bedroom at night and fighting on the maid in a second. When you want some blood taken out of you, you're just like, oh, no, I don't want that.
Yeah, so they end up going to the gyoza restaurant. Of course they do, because it's Mamoru Oshii, so therefore has to be fast food involved.
Also, they get to reuse a bunch of the background animation, including the exact same patrons, the exact same chef whom we never see from the front.
Yeah, like the two dudes near the table are just kind of mouthing away. I suppose it's just conceivable they could, again, be fairly shocked to see another vampire turn up at their local restaurant, so, you know, which aren't privy to what they're saying.
Yeah, and as they're discussing this, that's when Bamba's dad shows up. He's like, came home and you weren't there, so I guess you were going to be here. Oh, hello, it's my rival. And there's a great bit where they're staring each other down, and it's completely frozen, except for the chef, who is still cooking.
He's still a cookie.
Yeah, yeah. Right, it's the kind of cutaway where you can see the whole restaurant, but the chef is just like, yeah, fucking... He's got a lot of orders of garlic-based food to make.
They keep getting bigger. We keep having a giga-sized order for takeaway, please. Oh, yeah, I'm on it.
And it all ends up with Mai's dad being sent back to Romania in a coffin, organized by the teacher. But the Bamba's dad spots the paperwork, notices this, and he's like, I'm going to get a flight to Romania, so I'll get there before him and I'll be awaiting him. Because his plan is to wipe out... It was like, the reason Mai's dad was mad at Bamba's dad is because he turned to dust all these like very distant relations.
Yeah, my second cousin's like third wife or something like that. Yeah, it was never any, like, you haven't really been affected by this much, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but now when I go to meet him at like the wedding or the christening, like I have no one to make small talk with anymore.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that was pretty much the sum of the parts. But there's like loads and loads of gags crammed in there.
I like the fact anyone can pull out a giant syringe at any time.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
The bits where people are continually being sedated, I did enjoy a lot.
Yeah, I've seen the two papas in there. I'm getting to hear Joji Nakata, because who else are you going to get to be? An old dude, gotta get him in there. I found a place who my dad was, and it was Roshi Masaki. I think I last heard him playing Bacchus in Rage of Bahamut. He has that kind of like very gruff kind of when he's getting very agitated, it gets very high, like on courage. He's like, what are you doing? It's like, you shouldn't be having that kind of pitch, but here we are. It's funny. This guy got back to his job at Helsinki University. Van Helsinki. Good.
Then we've got Pui Pui Molcar, episode 10. I Want to Be the Hero. In which Abby has finally had their provisional license sticker taken off. So their owner has finally learned how to drive, or Abby's finally learned how to drive. I don't know how exactly.
I mean, it's probably the mole car is fine. It's just when you got the provisional license, you're just like, yeah, you got to be a bit more cautious. But now she can really cut loose and start working out and become Superman, Batman mole car.
Okay, so excited. I'm going to get tuned up. I'm going to get kitted out with all the body work. It's going to be class. It's that kind of superhero we're going for. I'm not into that. I didn't know you were one of those types who spray paints the anime girl on the hood of your car.
Yeah, a very different body kit than what she was looking for. Which is pretty fun, because it was just like we see a little the plastic guy, and then when it kind of cuts back to him, he's got the total otaku thing with the big glasses, like the headband and everything. And he's like, yes! Sex.
He's got to go straight down to animate, and you got to park poor Abby outside, and everyone's got to look at her. Like, oh no, everyone can see how lame I am, or like imagine how lame I am. And it's kind of interesting as well to see like different animation forms bring in here as well, because you have our usual stop car greatness, but imagining all everybody in the street laughing at you, it's like, oh, kind of animating, dark fingers pointing in, oh, you're an idiot. I felt really sad then, because it just runs up and cries in the alley. It was very harrowing.
But they would actually. That's why when Abby runs off, they're like, they look surprised and concerned. because they weren't actually doing it. It was all in Abby's head.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Boy, my ears have popped for goodness knows how long, and everybody sounds suddenly much louder in my...
Vaccine kicking in. Super soldier serum.
Yeah, it's and they're continuing to pop as my jaw moves up and down. So that's happening. And I've just had to adjust the sound because I think I've spotted why. I was peaking a little at the start of the recording and may have done on one or two words. So hopefully I'm still sounding good on the recording now. What's the magical girl guinea pig called? I can't remember what her name was. She had a name.
Oh, there was a name, was there?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a name. Because you see her poster in your men's, I guess his garage, and you see it around town as well, but I can't remember what the
it's
hell.
It's like something like Magical Mollica or something. There's a mole in there.
Yeah, yeah, like it's some sort of pun on Molka or something.
But yeah, it's so powerful, that Atasha, that it actually allows Abby to turn into a magical girl.
Well, I mean, like, there's an emergency situation. A cat is stuck in a tree. Oh, no. And the branch breaks. So, superpower transformation activate, I suppose. And also, I do like the little animation of the decal on the side going like, you know, also paying attention to this. That was pretty fun.
Cat's in danger. Mold car, prison power, makeup.
Yeah.
Swoops
yeah.
in for the save.
So, yes, that's if anyone's doing like panels on magical girls, you now got to include the possibility that guinea pig cars could become magical girls as well.
Yeah. Well, it's like that argument when, you know, Disney keeps buying stuff. So that means the alien queen's a Disney princess. Well, that means now that when you see it happen, even in parody, that means that no, that counts. More characters are magical girls.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah, it's a good one. Oh, what the fuck is going on with my microphone? I've now suddenly got super loud again, and I've not touched a goddamn thing. So it's either the microphone or the mixer going crazy. So that's something to deal with.
Superpowers manifesting.
It is. yeah, coming to Netflix very soon, Poo Poo Molcar. So if you've missed out on the 7 days you have to watch the episodes on the Bandai channel, you'll shortly be able to binge watch all 12 episodes.
Yes. And you've got no excuse.
The only thing that worries me about like it being available for more people is like, are they going to be too short? And obviously people are going to watch like one after the other. It's like, hey, where's more? It's like, it takes a while to make these fucking things, dude.
I don't know. There's enough churn on that thing. I imagine, you know, maybe folks wouldn't mind a little bit of just brevity and levity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, oh man, another season of Ozarks. Where are we up to now? 20? I wouldn't mind. It's something a little more digestible. Just an easy breezy afternoon little thing.
Then we've got Dr. Stone, Stone Walls, Episode 9, To Destroy and to Save. In which the end of the battle comes as... we managed to get a truce, and I read the most depressing thing I've read in quite a while in the comments on Crunchyroll when somebody was going, what's a truce?
Oh, boy.
And oof. I was like, yeah, I guess you don't hear about them in the news very often.
You're old enough to have lived through 2 decades of constant warfare and beyond, maybe.
Yeah, as in this is the norm, I guess, in some points of view. Fuck's sake. Now I'm sad, Brian. Thanks a lot.
Oh, don't worry.
The world can't come fast enough, man.
We'll cheer you up when we get to Komodo G-Head.
it's quite good because obviously the thing they managed to cobble together is basically nitroglycerin.
Yeah,
and I did enjoy that. Literally, him saying in episode as well as the end of the episode, going like, "Please do not try this at home, children. this is very, very bad." But it's like, how do we get the nitroglycerin to them? How about a Guinness World Records best fucking flight paper airplane? That'd be the way to do it. Which I was like, that's actually pretty cool. I'm not sure I've seen that in anything before, like nitroglycerin soaked paper airplanes.
Dripping in paper, no. I can only think of A Fistful of Dynamite. You got one James Coburn, he's just going like, bleep, and then blowing up. Dude behind him, yeah.
Yeah, it was quite good, but as everyone kind of like it points out, is like, yeah, but you don't want it. We've demonstrated by throwing one, you could fucking kill like a lot of people with this, but you don't want to kill anyone. But we can't possibly beat that, so it's a stalemate. Therefore, truce, which means they get to talk, and what exactly do you want? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, also we figured out what you want because we've got brains and. People who can read people and they figure out that he's like, well, why were you a teenager fighting in all these MMA fights?
And also, like, not, it wasn't about the fighting, it wasn't about tournaments and stuff, it was about getting on TV and doing promotions for it
and getting prize money and all that. Also, why are you doing this since you were like 8? You're getting in the ring, I presume this is about like very much more underground matches. You're getting in the ring as an 8-year-old, but some dude who's like 3 times your age, and naturally you're getting pounded. But you keep going. Why are you doing that? Can't be for the fame, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's for the money. Why do you need money?
Because my little sister is in a coma and she might not wake up without getting a special operation that might help her.
You can kind of see why he hates adults as well. It's not like the doctors ain't doing their fucking job, but his home life isn't exactly fucking great, and he's the only one keeping her on, I assume, basically life support.
And Senku's like, well, being turned to stone, protecting me from the broken neck you gave me.
Fixing that, like, cured his broken neck, basically.
Yes. So, let's go find your sister and turn her back from stone. And hey, look, we've just invented nitroglycerine again, so we can blow up the area where we think she is to dig down, and anyone else we accidentally blow up, we can just glue back together. She's like that hand coming to grip his shoulder.
Motherfucker, you don't have to do that.
You will take care. Yeah, so that gets them at least on the same side for now.
It was a team effort, because while all was going on, like, the rest of the science team, but science kind of are outside just trying to just hold them off. They can't fucking really defeat Tsukasa or Hyoga, but then down, and every second they buys another second to know what progress for. That's what science is about, man. It's making baby steps towards the bigger thing at the end. It's hard work and everyone's gotta pitch in. It's as well, like, this kind of reflective as well. I won't say precisely what events are going on currently in the comic for you, those who have not read it at home, but it was redefined the parameters of the very name of the comic and the series. Like, Dr. Stone, what's that? And initially, it was presented to us a long time ago. Dr. Stone is like the soap. It's kind of like a rock, but you can kind of rub it on yourself and it gets rid of germs. And it's, you know, ish.
It gets rid of germs, it's an excellent lubricant for basic machinery, and obviously it's a key component of the kind of soap is a key component of nitroglycerin.
Yeah, but as well we find, Dr. Stone could also mean the depetrification process, which has this healing side effect to it. So it says, oh, okay. It's like, as they discover new things about this new world they live in, what Dr. Stone actually means, what our Dr. Stone is, what it means to us, is changing and evolving as we discover and learn more about it. And it's again a scientific method. No, this is like, you know, laid out in things. That's why the theory is not laws of science. No, it's like a theory. It means if we find out something later about it, it could change because it's always evolving. Always being discussed.
Yeah, another good episode. I guess is this 12 or 13 they're doing for this season? Do we know?
It must be only doing like just a little short run of it here. There's still some things to be resolved at the end of this storyline here. So I think, this is all going too well. I don't recall wrapping up this tidily, but saying, no, there's extra bits to this.
There's a little hint of it in this episode. just the look on, across somebody's eyes and seeing nitroglycerine.
Well, also him doing like the reveal of his scars when he does it, which is like, okay, that's significant, obviously.
So nitroglycerine is, that's awesome. You can blow up so much shit with this. Like, gotta have a go at that.
Mm. Then we get to Heaven's Design Team, episode 10, Idea 10, in which our voice of God is in a mysterious world where he's a visitor and he's asking lots of questions. It's full of all these androgynous people with numbers on their chests, and they're ruled by a queen, and then your brain's going, okay, well, this is a little different, but it's clearly representing something in the natural world. My brain
was like, ant colony? Termite colony? I was going through the wrong fucking things, and has it like a clear, just a straight up, not even clue, like, but if you know the animal, it's just like, oh, and we don't get cancer. And I was just like, ah, I should have got it from that, but I didn't. I didn't get it for ages.
I didn't get it at all till they revealed it was they are actually naked mole rats.
Because God wanted a thing for the perfect society, so to see if it's the perfect society, you have to experience it firsthand in virtual reality.
And apparently, the world of being a naked mole rat is very much like some sort of high-tension shoujo manga.
High-tension shoujo manga set in like the absolute dominant like empire kind of thing?
Yes.
With, it's, like, it's
kind of like a Logan's Run vibe, where everyone's doing the same thing. And there's a lot of kind of turnover as well, because you can't challenge the queen, because that's the way our society is set up. You know, it's just the queen's always there. The queen is
perfect. Because
this journal from number 72, when I'm kind of reading, it's been troubling me, and it says this last line: "I think I might challenge the queen." And then you get to that final showdown, you know, like, ah, you've been trying to hypnotize me, my queen. I will defeat you. And then, like, draws her sword, cuts across the front of her clothing. It's like number 72 on the queen's chest. but our society. It's like, yes, I had to hide this from you to preserve order.
Become a great queen. And the fact that, like, everyone's armed with a sword at all times, it was like, ah, because that's their teeth. I get it. Yeah, that's cool.
Yes.
Where are those guys going? Oh, they're going off the battle. They're not going to survive. They're just going to, like, block up the tunnel, because their noble sacrifice will save the rest of the colony.
Yeah, we'll fill it in behind them, and they'll get eaten to distract the predator. Perfect.
Yeah, I knew about they don't necessarily age or get a lot of cancers or tumors at that. I didn't realize that they were the only mammal that had like this social colony system similar to what insects have.
That was
really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because they're being in the it turns out to be like a VR simulation. It's that Miles has made. The supplement they take is mind controlling the one who'd left at the start of the episode, and they were like, oh, that they were at the very edge of the colony, so that's why.
So they didn't get like re-upped on the thing often, and that can cause the naked mole rat to fuck off from the colony.
Yeah. And then it turns out it was the supplement is the queen's poop. It feeds its own excrement to. It's keep offspring to keep them loyal, yes.
Yeah.
And then we get a little bit of science about how the queen gets longer when it gets pregnant in order to carry on and be able to patrol the tunnels.
Yeah, it's just to look at them as just naked mole rat. That's not the most appealing thing, you know, at design times, but like as in terms of efficiency in function, you can't really go wrong with it. It's everything works. It's not the most appealing package, but. It gets the job done with aplomb.
And then the second half is they're sending a demon to hell, but it gets stuck.
It gets stuck in like the fax machine to hell because he interrupted the dark ceremony.
Paper jam.
No, we have to like sacrifice blood. Ah, fuck, it's stuck now. Jeez. What are we going to do about that? Like, everyone want to take a break? Take some tea? Fucking have a bit of cake? Well, the demon's stuck in the fucking... portal fax machine for the entire episode.
That's certainly the way it feels at work, at least in my job, when something breaks. It's just like, you may as well be fucking cutting open a chicken open this thing, but if you try everything else, you get to go.
So they take a break, and Shimoda discusses what God wants them to do next. And they're like, oh, we're on a break, but okay. He wants them to make an animal with renewal properties. And then they get into a discussion about aging and how aging is good for a species. And Saturn does a big demonstration for Shimoda.
They're like, I guess they're their binary fucking system of dots versus squares.
Yes. Yeah. And they've got this halo which allows them to rapidly speed up the aging process. And then you flip it, you can do the renewal and see how that works. And then they're like, and then of course Jupiter gets the idea of, hey, why don't we use the renewal side of that halo on the demon, so we can rewind things and we can try and put him through again. But unfortunately, this causes a terrible explosion. And by the end of the episode, Saturn is now a young man. He's no longer an elderly man. And everybody else has been blown through onto the Galapagos, presumably, are now toddlers and children. Oh, we've lost you, Niall. You've got very robotic, at least by end. I don't know if Niall was robotic to you, Dwayne.
Try that again, Niall.
Okay, I'll go and come back again.
So that's where we are at the end of the episode. After all those events that transpired. A good deal of the bulk of the second half is Saturn's explanation. For you, the audience, and Shimoda, our audience standing, about this is why we age. This is why...
No, it's a fair enough reason, the fact that, if we don't know that at this stage of planet Earth, one virus can fucking wipe us out if we don't have enough difference
in terms
of...
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that? Exactly. That's not relevant to current events.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we don't need you to demonstrate this in an example for us. Yeah, we get it now. or at least some of us get it. Jesus. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I appreciate how they're branching out a bit as well, but how they approach explaining how animals are put together with the virtual reality simulation and with their sort of little test bed for how different effects work on living creatures.
I was also interested, because they get to have fun with the stuff that they send to hell. The goat actually uses pheromones to communicate, because I think it was we need a hell mascot that can communicate without talking, but it's its actual antlers are, or its horns are antenna that receive pheromones, and they're just sort of waving about, and I was like, oh, that's really freaky.
Why not?
They get to have fun with that and go here's a mad fucking thing that doesn't exist and could never exist, but let's have a bit of fun with them.
They come up then with the immortal jellyfish. And I like how Mercury and Venus usually does go on one. Yeah, got it in one.
Got it during break. Fucking A.
Oh, and because Saturn wants to start off by testing the renewal with
of course.
A mini horse, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So disappointed, but it goes back into a single cell. All right. Out comes a horse. It's that looks like a jellyfish, dude. It's let's just start with a jellyfish.
Yeah. See, the horse wouldn't work. Imagine if you reduce a doctor down to a baby. That doesn't mean that baby's going to become a doctor again one day. It doesn't quite work out like that.
And literally, that's what's happening all of them now. So that's pretty fun.
And they're even cuter. Then Neptune be happy with that. I think as well, is Neptune is in any background shot? Is he always going to have a little baby bear or an otter in his lap for anything? Even not involved in it all. Just here's this cute thing I'm tweaking around with. Just going to have a little, feel little kicks. It's lovely.
I think it was an issue he had a teddy of a rabbit or something, but now he's switched to I'm actually just going to bring the cute animal I'm making around with me.
Well, he's made the otter. He just carries on bringing the otter with him. It's his masterpiece, you see.
But that's true, yeah.
You imagine that in there. That's a staff for the otter. It's a pretty good design. We'll go from there.
Then we've got Jujutsu Kaisen, episode 22, The Origin of Blind Obedience.
Got the team back together. Got Itadori and Kukisaki and Fushiguro. They're been dispatched. It's a bit police procedural. Gonna go question some witnesses, get some leads about a string of seemingly unrelated, or at least on the surface anyway, cursed related deaths because of these dudes.
Who's the one who's handling them? She's driving them around as well.
Oh, she's just like, it isn't like Ichiji or anything.
Yeah, it's a different one.
The handler is patch for this. All relating to like dudes that got killed because the automatic shutter on their home or business premises wasn't working properly, and that's when the curse gets a drop on them, I suppose. But besides that, can't figure out any link between them initially, so we're trying to sort it out.
But the other thing is they all went to the same school is the other link.
It's what they find.
Because they're in completely different places, but they're all at the doorstep. They're getting killed through the automatic thing, and it's not showing up because... our boy asked, like, is like it didn't show up on the camera or anything. It's like, yeah, it only affected the electronics for the door shutters, not for anything else. So the door, like, has been automatically left open, and they all, like, complained to the manager about it, of the various places they were living, but then they ended up horribly fucking mutilated and shit. So they're like, okay, there's a fourth guy they went to school with, who's another related thing, so maybe he has some insight on it. They go to the guy's house. It's his funeral. He's like, fuck, okay, this is clearly a problem now. But he didn't die at, like, an automatic door. He just died at the porch to his old-style house.
Yeah.
So but, it's like, again, okay. Similar kind of thing. It's something to do with getting at the door being left
passed
open.
To a doorway, you know, that's a very very ritualistic, mystical thing tied to a lot of, like, superstition.
And all these guys went to school together, so it's just like, okay, we should check out the school then. So they go to the school, they find some tough-looking kids.
Like, huh? Who's this? Bushiguro-senpai! Oh, didn't know you were back, sir. I was like, oh. Because
he used to be the toughest guy in this school. Like, even the old... it's not actually a teacher, it's like a groundskeeper or something, isn't he?
I thought he was a principal or vice principal, wasn't he?
I thought he was wearing like a jumpsuit, but maybe he was doing karate.
This bit attracts it anyway, because
that's true.
You've seen Battle Royale, you've seen Beat Takeshi, you see the principal of the school. So.
Taking it easy. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, he recognizes him and going like, yeah, they're talking about those students, because obviously they were out of school like a few years at this stage, but they would have been ahead of him. And they weren't quite as rough as him. But they were like on the kind of tougher end. And this sort of leads them to this thing of, I guess, the cool kid ceremony to be in with the cool crowd. You have to bungee jump off haunted bridge.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's all tied to a dare. That's the model models. And I think, we got to go kind of investigate that. They go there and they spend the night, but nothing happens. They don't see the cursed spirits for anything. So what's going on with this? And also, like, what's happened to trigger it and set it off right now? Like, why are they why are they only like dying now rather than some set period after they did the dare? Because some of these guys that were to school and they're years apart from each other. So how has it happened?
Yeah.
And then there is a girl who. Knows Fushiguro, but most specifically knows Fushiguro's elder sister went to school. And we know that she is laid up in a hospital in a coma. And he says, well, like, yeah, well, one night me and my sister, like, we went down to the bridge to do the dare. We didn't see anything either. And all was just... I said, the Fushiguro says, oh, no, whatever happened, my sister is involved with us as well. And he's trying to think, Fushi's kind of crazy, trying to figure out what to do. Something related to this, anything that can, like, kill as many people that some, like, up their cursed spirit. Can we take it on? Will it be just like last time when we went into, we got sent into that last job and we got killed? Okay, we should probably wait until Godo Sensei comes back. No, we haven't got time for that because my sister could be dead in a week. What to do.
Like, it's not only that this thing will randomly, like, and it appears to be like a time scale, it's like killing people at a interval of like every week, every 2 weeks, something like that. So fairly often, and it's just like, I don't know when he doesn't know when his sister's on the clock there, and also there's going to continue to be deaths if they don't do anything about it.
Yeah, so Fushiguro tries to send the rest of them away. He's gonna do this himself, no matter what the risk is, no matter what the danger is, I'm gonna take it out to myself, because I'm the one who's being selfish and wanting to make the call here. Because again, he's like turning, like, they're doing it by procedure in the jujutsu world, but there's also like doing the thing that you know is right, and then when not always line up with procedure or protocol, or doing it by the book, you gotta wait for backup. It's like, no, I gotta go and do this. But Itadori and Kukisaki guys back, it's like, not like last time, man, not like last time. We're a team, we're together.
Yeah.
So we're going down, get on their bridge together. So they go down to the bottom of it and they figure, ah, it's a river at the bottom of this. So the act of crossing a threshold.
Crossing over the river at midnight kind of thing is basically the mystical thing, rather than the bungee jumping off the bridge. There wasn't going to be an apparition on the bridge. It's crossing under is what you're doing.
Yeah. And sure enough, they cross over and they're in some kind of like of a domain in there. And they're
the first... what do they call it? Incomplete domains, the ones that are kind of fixed in one spot.
Yeah, it's like the first bad job to run out where it was like a kind of weird prison. It was like a fucking Escher drawing of stairs leading to nowhere. It's like, oh, there's a curse in here. Fucking two levels get rid of it. But then something worse comes in, barreling out of nowhere. It's some horrible green hulk and yoke who's got a face on top of its face. How does that work? It looks really weird. But it's talking to us. It seems sentient, intelligent. This is probably bad news. The door is like, one, you guys take care of the big one. I got this.
And we did see earlier that this is sent by our talking curse boys who were just like, basically going over is like how the bunch of curses, that the special ones that they'd stolen. It's just like, oh, so while Sukina's fingers only work on certain people or certain things, these ones will just work on anything. They have a guy pinned to the wall and it's like, open up, here comes the aeroplane.
It's really gross.
Yeah, it's nasty. They really went into detail as to how nasty that was, and that appears to be the weird two-faced hulky thing that is attacking them now.
Yeah. It was good to get...
on the job.
The three of them back together. They're on the job. They're hunting down the clues. We're seeing as well how they progressed and changed in their approach towards it. Like Fushiguro... Again, comparing it as well with episode 4 in the run of this series anyway, but that job they went on where everything went wrong. So comparing it back then, their approaches back then were, oh, we weren't strong enough back then, so naturally we won't get nearly killed during it. And Fushiguro was more like, oh no, I gotta be fucking cold, do it by the book. Don't bring the guy's bodies back. We're here to do a job professionally. But now this time it's the flip side.
It's personal.
Doing this for a selfish emotional reason. It's personal.
Yeah.
But they've always got his back because they know how he feels about it. They probably, if it was them, they'd do it the same way. Itadori certainly would do the exact same thing. But they're fresh from, like, you know, fighting off like a special great curse spirit. You know, Toda was there as well, so that helped. But, you know, they're not the same as they were before. They're a bit more clear and a bit more tougher than theirs, and the guy's down by him. And also hang around for levity because being such a dumbass, especially when like they're seeing Fushiguro's old school chums, because when they see him roll up, the delinquents are going like, huh, who's this? And then they immediately start, oh, sorry, senpai. And the Tori Kusaki phone said, that's right, we are cool, and you should be bowing down to us.
they get a lot of dumbassery moments in it, but part of that makes it feel like an investigation thing, because it's not just we have a job and we got to go do the thing. It's like, no, this guy went to this school. The guy we're on the job with went to this school. They have a past. They have they feel more like fully rounded people and everything. It's like, oh, we heard the legend of you. You're a stone cold badass, that kind of thing. It makes it feel more like a fully lived in world, and it works well as a. Not so much a mystery, but as a procedural. Yeah.
Looking forward to the second cursed womb brother, who had a very striking design, which I wouldn't mind seeing animated. No,
yeah,
we're used to seeing kind of big, blobby, like, you know, cursed monsters before. So the first thing who comes in the end of this episode, not surprising. But next one, yeah, you'd notice him in the crowd, all right. Look forward to that.
Then what about the payoff thing after the credits, the gag?
Oh, the juju straw.
Yes. What was it this time?
Jesus, what the hell was it now? Right.
You get caught up in the episode and then you forget the straw.
Who did it focus on? I can't even recall it now. I do recall what came out of it though, which was a dog and a cat every day is fun, because how could we get such a fine cartoon is this?
Well, I always forgot until I watched it while we were waiting for Dwayne. so the first half is the owner's at a restaurant and she's thinking about when she used to come here when she was younger and ask for the bones to be wrapped up on the particular cut of meat that she'd order.
Ask for it, like sneakily do it into her napkin, basically.
Well, eventually she's bringing plastic bags, and yes, the the waiting staff remember her, much to her embarrassment.
I remember you. You were first doing it, you wrap it up in your napkin, but then you got clever and put it in a plastic bag, and it's just like, oh god, this is so embarrassing that you would remember me for that.
But then
they got the inn, because then you started chatting about dogs.
Yes. And then the second half is how she always used to praise dog when he did a shit, and so that has made dog think that she loves poop.
She praised him, like, when he crapped in his, like, in the right place. She picks up his poop on the walks. What was the other bits? There was another thing as well, where it's just like, yeah, the dog thinks I'm really into shit, and I don't want it to think that.
I don't want to be viewed that way. You feel very seen when you do that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go into the cat thinking that she wanted half-dead animals, but... obviously, there wasn't enough episode time for that to happen. Maybe next week.
I'm guessing like that. You get the whole thing on cat shit, and I mean, like that's its own bit. I just checked the jujitsu stroll. During the investigation, they stop a purse snatcher by beating the shit out of him.
Oh yeah.
The woman invites him back to her Chinese restaurant that she was gonna. It was gonna end after her father retired, but she insisted on keeping going. And they all go. They have a lovely time. And then I was leaving. He's like, was it weird to you that there was no meat in the gyoza? Yeah, that was weird. I'm glad
that
you
was shit
that
food.
Up.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's a really nice woman and all that. I really feel for her family. But God, that food. Jesus
Christ. Such a nice sob story and everything. But and then Didori points out, you know, gyoza isn't supposed to have meat in it. It's supposed to be like a vegetable dish, right? And they're all like, what? That's it. That's it. It's a very silly fucking thing.
talking of silly fucking things. Back Arrow, episode 10, Can Have Nots Have Backbone?
Oh boy. Character introduction of the week.
Yes, Rudolph. A man who has apparently swallowed a warp binder. He's essentially swallowed
a giant warp binder.
I mean, like, to be fair, he might have just put it on his arm and the fat has just grown around
but
it.
Because there's another him inside of him in that. He is essentially a guy who has eaten a super robot, which has caused his blood to become so hot he cannot allow himself to get serious-minded in case he will destroy the world.
he's decided to become like an absolute... I've forgotten the fucking Greek god's name again.
Or Dionysus.
Dionysus, that's
yes.
what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
He's living a dissolute lifestyle to protect the Earth. And unfortunately, he says, by the end of the episode, clearly this was all part of some plan he's got. It was his blood which was used when the princess took her fall, when your scientist boy thought they were a bird. And so shot them with a crossbow.
Still no follow up on that. You know,
yeah.
Hope there'll be someone on it later, but I think they're just gonna forget about that. And I think, but why was he's a doctor? Why would he be that stupid? I don't know.
Based on this episode, that does appear to be what he did. But yes, he invites our absconded heroes to visit his basically just every door's a vagina, everything looks like
Palace
a vagina.
Of depravity.
Yeah, it's something. If it isn't Palace of Depravity, it's like some sort of I've forgotten the art style, but some weird ass fucking thing made out of colorful human body parts. But yeah, the inside is like super fucking sexual. You got this super fat dude who's constantly like eating stuff, and also he's a big pile of like naked men and women all around him.
Those are the discards from he's the supreme elect. He's
he's the guy who picks the next queen.
Decides who's going to be the next queen or king. And
so you assume like he has the power over the queen, or as who bees the queen. So therefore, he's the real power. But the ones that don't get picked, they get thrown to him. And
Well, no, he's
dying, right?
Yeah, he saved them. Forever. He says, "Yeah, he makes it clear. Yes, normally they're supposed to be killed if they don't get elected.
So there's no like competition. But he, like in his magnanimousness, it's just like, yeah, they can come here and be part of my sex harem. And also the thing of like, oh, why did you give her your blood? Isn't that super dangerous? It's like, yeah, but I mean, like, we got loads of spares, so no problem, right?
And
he's supposed to be the good guy because he's protecting them this whole fucking time. It's weird.
It is weird. Yes,
I'm gonna like it. That's the way it was.
A back arrow causes him briefly to get serious, and when we see him get serious, we briefly see an outline of a smaller man inside this very large man. So something's weird there, probably connected in the same way to your boy being your emperor being able to use conviction without a warp binder and a bry height.
And definitely something to do. It's like, hey, well, that's probably why the queen is all fucked up, because she has like a weird split personality, and you have a dude inside you that is the serious version of you.
I'm assuming my guess is that Lingoland is actually some sort of giant petri dish that whoever is on the outside of the wall is conducting the experiments.
Looking to find compartmentalizing the soul or like trying it in, because again when we see another like thing of that at the end of the episode when Princess Fina is able to basically put the more bloodthirsty kill crazy personality inside a warp binder and it turns into a black one rather than a silver color. I think,
yeah,
okay, what the hell does that mean then towards everything else?
And it's one thing for it to be, like you say, like a petri dish that's experimenting on this idea, but like within that, they're experimenting on each other to find like what makes the best thing. Like
it's one that's firing in really advanced technology
kind of spur them on.
It works in the just to see what are they going to do with this, and how are the societies like evolving? See two ones like Luto and Rekka. We've seen the two directions that they've gone with this. We have like they're both kind of monarchies in a sense, but they have a different field. But look at that this princess from executing all the villagers. She got to run to the rescue, in which Back Howard says, "I'm just going to decide I can fly now."
He does, but yes.
I claw myself because I'm carrying the dudes at me, but I can fly. I saw someone else do it, so if they can do it, I presume I can if I think hard enough about it. Rings.
Yes, it's before we get to, it's Prax versus Elsha. And
the queen's like met him a deal. It's like, fight for your life. It's like, all right, but if I win, you have to set all of us free. Queen's kind of like, that's fucking bullshit. You just have to fucking, like, we're either you submit to me and we chop off your legs so you can run the ship, or I kill all your fucking guys and you. That's the deal. But, Prax being a nice goes like, no, that's fair. I can fucking win this. We'll take those terms.
Back Arrow shows up wanting to do the fight, and she's like, no, this is my fight.
I'm the village leader. I'm going to fucking win this on my terms.
And Back Arrow says, fair enough, but what I shall do to help you is I will turn myself into a sword. Which surprises Shubi and Bit, because they're still in the in the mecha.
Yeah, they're still in the sword the whole time, I guess. The weird liminal space. And it's kind of like, wait, you can just turn into... It's like, yeah, so like she has a sword, so now you have a sword, which is me. So that makes it a fair fight. But the sword is like as big as her robot. Which is it's fun because it's like the big heavy sword versus like the graceful fencing sword, that kind of thing.
You may have to rejoin again, Niall. You've gotten very laggy again.
Oh, damn it! What's going on there?
Also, my microphone has gotten incredibly sensitive again.
You love technical problems.
Yep. I will also briefly disappear.
I'm going to stay here so it fucking keeps going.
Yes. I was going to turn the video off. So you don't see the ungainly sight of me getting up from my seat and wandering over somewhere. Oh, no, Skype has gone completely... Okay.
running because at least it's a singular one. I say like it's fine enough, dude. Like at least you know where to stop and start it.
Maybe one less thing running will stop the fucking thing failing so much.
It's so strange. Yeah.
It's whatever. Sounds bad. Always sounds bad. Something running here to do for Neto. Beating this for me. Can we turn that off? I don't know.
Sorry, I just noticed the YouTube thing. It is still running. Someone called Sam Galaxy said hi. I assume that's a bot. I could be wrong.
Hi, Sam Galaxy. Sorry, Sam Galaxy, if you're a person. for your viewing pleasure, I will enjoy an orange club mug. Oh.
Oh, trying not to drop out again. I noticed the sound wasn't on, so I'm guessing there's some other fucking trouble. Oh, well.
Sorry, everybody watching. The stream's
going. Absolutely fucking carnage. Right, okay.
Okay.
Oh, God, I'm still far too loud. Let me try and do something about that. Though, really, I don't know what is causing me to be so loud. Okay, that'll have to do for now. Okay, where were we? We're back arrow. We've got Gnarl back.
Back arrow has turned into a sword.
He has, certainly has. Yeah, he's got, it's a great sword as well. It's got like jets on it.
It's really nice.
God, there was like a hammer in Monster Hunter that had like a jet on the back of it, and it was just for the visual flair. But I love the idea of like just it swinging you around, basically. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's nice little moment for Elisha as well. It's like, yeah, like she's gotta be the chief of the village, and the chief's gotta stand up for the people. She gotta let her like get her shot at this one, and if you miss that thing, work. So we spin around real fast, turn the jets on. We'll probably hit her at some point.
You can like throw yourself into the air with the momentum of this gigantic fucking sword.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's the fun.
I was
like,
wondering as well.
No, sorry. Go on.
I was wondering as well, like, you know, this like practice going to like not necessarily kind of throw the fight, but you know, make it look convincing enough. She doesn't agree what this evil version of the princess is doing either.
But her conviction is to support the princess.
But I think genuinely, oh, I didn't know he's going to turn it into a sword with jets on us. I think you genuinely got the drop on me in this one. Fair dues. But at least I didn't die because I got hit by back arrow, even in sword form, so I don't get killed.
Still counts as not, like, she gets the win, but back arrow does the kill, so no one gets killed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Fine is going to fight, but then she fights herself in the end, and as we said, traps the evil Fine in the Bind Warper, which turns black, and that seems to make Rudolph quite happy that this has happened. As if this
all
was
going according to plan.
The intention all along.
Mm.
But yes, Rudolph's character design is quite the thing. He's an enormous man with a tiny face.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like imagine like the of a Tom and Jerry cartoon or something where fucking Tom he eats the balloon, the balloon inflates inside of him. It is exactly like that.
I can see that.
You think like, you know, oh, some cool robots, we've got like, kind of menacing emperors and generals and warlords and fighters here. And then this dude, who was the strongest man on the planet, apparently, if we didn't believe him. He's just a fucking ridiculous looking character. It's pretty impressive.
Righty-ho, moving along, we've got No Escape the Infinity, because it was a recap episode. Instead we have Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, episode 23, The Dragon Knight, in which Dai has to ask the question, am I a man or am I a monster? Well, he is neither. He is a Dragon Knight. Turns out there's so two of them.
It's kind of his world seems to collapse in pretty quickly. Because this gets done fighting off this Hydra and saving the town, but he was employing, like, you know, drawing upon the Dragon Knight's power to do so. Even, like, Robin, like, the very valuable dragon-killing sword weapon, stabby knifey thing from your man. So, but rather than the town being grateful for his exploits, they are in fear of him for the incredible power that he exhibited while doing that. It's like, that's very scary.
I mean, like, he broke out of one Hydra Neck's grip with just pure fucking force and, like, exploded its fucking head and then stabbed that thing in and then called lightning down to be, like, a conductor into the fucking Hydra. It's like, I I'm watching it like, this is badass as fuck. And this is, again, where they used that, definitely used that CG for ages, have they?
Been a while.
Yeah, it's definitely been a bit. But, I was like, this is badass as fuck. But the towns were like, that is fucking terrifying. That, like, you single-handedly killed a fucking Hydra. That's pretty crazy. But to be fair, like, Pop has kicked the ass of 3 out of 5 dragons, which is pretty impressive. used up all his magic power to do it, but, you know.
Yes, at which point the dragons woke back up again. I was like, were they just waiting to see if he said that? They were like, oh, don't move, lads, if he's that powerful. I'll hang
if
on.
If he has another one of those in them, let's fucking stay down. Like, he doesn't? All right, let's get him.
Yeah.
Does Dai dispatch those ones as well? I feel like it does.
At one point he picks one green dragon up and swings it into another.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing you want to happen in your campaign.
But Kilvern is there to taunt them, you know, take the starch out of the zest out of their victory. He's like, yes, you're a dragon knight, you're a weapon of mass destruction. You're no hero at all. You don't know who you really are. Like, and Dai's world is flying off from underneath them. Very quickly, actually.
So he heads to the temple. Speaks to a crystal. The crystal says, yes, you're a dragon knight. You're not a man. You're not a monster. Allow me to explain. Oh, the alarm's gone off.
The alarm only should go off if there's, like, a second Dragon Knight in here, but that's, what are the odds of that? Like, there's only, like, one every fucking century.
Yes, it turns out there should not be 2 Dragon Knights, so why has another Dragon Knight entered this temple that only Dragon Knights can enter? And it is Baron, and he's like, I'm here for you, Dai, I'm not here to fight you, I want your power, you come with me and help us crush mankind.
Join me, Dai, and together we can rule the galaxy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fill your purpose. I thought this like compressing like a whole volume or something, but no, like in the original run of chapters, it was like going at this clapper of a pace. We get him fighting and defeating a 5-headed Hydra, you know, having this existential crisis, discovering the origin of that existential crisis, and then meeting his long lost father. We didn't know about that yet.
No, we don't know about that yet, but the preview definitely heavily suggests it.
I mean, like, as if the fucking entire show hasn't been heavily suggesting it, yeah.
And covering more an episode than more series do in half of their runtime, you know?
Well, yes, more than what the previous adaptation of this did in half its runtime. They don't think they get up to this point in the previous adaptation. Over twice as many episodes.
Yeah, that. I mean, like, that one has been superseded at this stage easily.
It's good stuff. And talking of remaking things, Detective Conan episode 1001, the Moonlight Sonata murder part 2, in which it all becomes a lot easier to figure out what's going on. So Conan figures out what else was going on, drugs his girlfriend's dad, pretends to be him, handily over an intercom so that he doesn't have to be hiding around a corner.
He doesn't have to puppet the dead or anything. No. Yeah. I feel like this one wasn't fair. It's like, haha, that piano was used to smuggle drugs. I was like, how the fuck would I have been able to figure that out? That's bullshit.
It turns out the doctor did it.
Yeah.
The doctor was actually the son of the pianist in disguise.
Because we didn't know he had a son. Again, another thing I couldn't have fucking solved. Because it's like, oh, his wife and daughter, who he had, died in the house fire. It's like, but his son got sick and had to go onto the mainland to recuperate, like some long-term illness or something.
Yeah, I feel like the way you can figure it out yourself is by being able to read music.
Yeah, okay, that's probably it, because the code is basically like the line of keys, and it literally whatever the notes are is like A B C D E. Like you can just fucking read the. Yes. I mean, in Japanese still, but yeah, you can.
Yeah,
you
it's one of these ones which it's the clues are there, but it's a cipher, so you've and. It's a cipher into Japanese, so it's
a cipher using English letters into Japanese.
Yes.
So, like, I'm fucked because I'm not even good at anagrams in English. So that's not fair, is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you didn't consider the possibility, so it's on you, really.
That's my fault.
Yeah, all the victims were behind this drug smuggling thing, and the pianist 12 years ago wanted out. They set fire to his house and murdered him and his family, but his son was ill and was on the mainland, so avoided this being murdered. And his father had left him,
like, went through medical school and came to the island as a woman with the name just inverted so that he could hide the fact that it was the son looking for the murderer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and they were like, oh, why did he send you a letter? And, well, he probably wanted Kogoro to try and stop him.
Stop him. Mm.
There was a red herring involving the mayor's assistant as well.
Yeah, the mayor's assistant was continuing to smuggle drugs with the piano. The boyfriend of one of the mayor candidates, the fiance of one of the mayor candidates, he's got a tuning, piano tuning hammer, and it's like, so he was tuning the piano. It's like, yeah, because he liked the pianist, basically. He was just like, no, he just likes piano. And then obviously he was going near it. So at that stage, the mayor's aide had like knocked him out and then jumped through the window. And he later on shows up with a cut hand. It's like, no, he's not nothing to do with these murders. He's just smuggling drugs. Arrest him for different reasons.
And the other thing which shows us that it's from 1994 for the comic and 96 for the anime adaptation is the final thing which allows Conan to figure it out, yes, involves an auto rewind tape player.
See, it looked like they only had 30 minutes to set this up, but it set itself for an auto flipping thing where it actually changed like the mechanism rather than having to flip the tape. So they actually, instead of having 30 minutes of blank time on the tape, they could have had a full hour of it. So fucking nerdy. I was like, oh god, that's so dumb. Also, I forgot about those kind of things.
Yeah, I had as well. I think my parents had one. But yeah, that was what was going on there.
You do get to have the pianist's son like burn himself alive with the piano and stuff like that. And Conan comes like, no, you don't have to do it. Your father wrote in the cipher that he wants you to live a good life. Well, it's too late for that now because my hands are bloodstained, small child. Throw a small child through a window. I would laugh. That was very funny to me. It's supposed to be dramatic, but I was like, Jesus Christ. That should. I mean, like, yeah, you're definitely going to hell for that.
Also, at this point, there's probably been multiple times during the 1001 episodes of watching Detective Conan where you've wanted to throw him through the window as well.
Yeah, so it's nice to see you once in a while.
I quite like the stuff with the elderly officer on the island.
I was still sure. I was like, oh, he's going to be the pianist. He's going to be the pianist. No, he's just an incompetent old man the entire fucking time.
But he's reasonable. He's like, how do you expect me to remember these things? It was 12 years ago.
We put those notes in the storage room like fucking like over a decade ago. I don't fucking remember where they went.
And how impatient the Tokyo cops are. We waited an hour when we got bored. We went away.
I mean, like, he spent like at least half an hour just looking for the key to the storage room. So
there were some good camera angles which I don't remember them doing in early episodes, of where you're getting like Conan's point of view. So it's like you've got these very tall adults around him. Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was fun. And now just the very long wait till whenever they get to some canon material again and we can hop back on.
Well, you've got so little to watch.
That's true. Yeah. Tropical Rouge Precure, Niall. Episode 3, Believe Yourself. super cute cure coral.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bad start. Niall's completely frozen on my screen.
God damn it, let's take two. Can you even hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Alright. That's weird. Alright.
Yeah.
Oh, spoke too soon.
Oh, God. Okay. 1 minute.
Yeah, sure. Oh, my God. It'll be all right on the night. Mahol.
Anyway, Zenkaiger. There's a cat man introduced this episode. He finds humans and all the other creatures which live on Earth absolutely adorable and calls them babies, even when they're not babies. But they don't, particularly cats, were not what being friendly with him, nor were dogs. But eventually, our heroes are trying to recruit new members after the mechanical parrot told them to. He wants to be their friend, but he doesn't necessarily want to fight. Then the bad guys, basically the scientist bad guy can turn the henchmen into representations of worlds they've trapped. So he trapped at some point a mushroom world and turned somebody into a mushroom villain, which caused everybody on Earth, or at least in the vicinity of the small area where this story takes place, to grow mushrooms on their heads, both the robot people and the humans. And also the animals, because there was a dog, I think, had got a mushroom on its head.
Must have been difficult to force a dog, a live-action dog, to wear a mushroom.
I think it may have been a CG mushroom.
Disappointing.
The cream for that.
At first, everyone's like, oh no, we got mushrooms on their heads. But then everyone very quickly becomes used to having mushrooms on their heads and stops worrying about it and goes about their day-to-day life when perhaps they should have been worrying about with the mushrooms on their heads, because eventually the bad guys activate the mushrooms as part two of their plan. And it causes all the earth beings, including the pets in the pet shop that the cat man likes to hang out at, to start coughing and spluttering and choking. And this is the thing which is going to turn him. He decides, I'm going to fight after all. I will join your Super Sentai team. So they fight. They grow big. They can't get on. So in order to... The reason they grow big is because they defeat the mushroom man, and then the bad guy summons in the giant robots that he brings in. And that accidentally steps on the mushroom man, which turns him into a giant mushroom man. And then the enemy scientist pretends that that's what was meant to happen all along, not that he was just as surprised as our heroes that it happened. There's also a running gag where... Last week, the dinosaur man shot one of the henchmen as the bad guy was making his speech. This time, the cat man did it. So I assume that's going to happen for each of these members, is they just straight up murder one of the henchmen in the middle of the bad guy's speech.
Jeez Louise.
There's a decorum to this, that you're just walking all over.
Yes. Mm. Zen Kaiser is like, oh, I'm going to turn big as well and sort those two out. And then the parrot's like, no, that's not what yours does. Yours combines the two. Which then teleports them into like some sort of weird sports stadium, makes them kiss, and then they combine.
They were throwing a lot of ideas at this.
Wow. And then he's inside them piloting, and then they're annoyed that they've been forced to combine, and so they pull each other up, they pull apart, so it's just half a robot and half a robot standing beside each other arguing. Eventually they pull themselves together, literally, and defeat the robot. Hooray! That's two members, two robots on the team now, three members in total, and you briefly see the janitor again in this episode, and also the lady robot who'll be joining, who is into fortune telling, is what we get the impression of from our brief moment we see her. It's a lot of fun. It's got more budget than Kira Major had. I think probably Kira Major had less budget because they were saving some of it for this 45th anniversary show. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you like sound stages as well, the sweet shop's like a nice big soundstage set, which I always appreciate. I like a set which is just clearly a soundstage. It also has better locations. That's the worst thing about Kirimajia. The very final fight is just like just off of a car park at some sort of power plant or something.
I've been limited, but where they could be allowed to film.
Whereas this has got action happens. Taking place on rooftops and stuff. It's it's a lot more aesthetically pleasing. Not that Kirimajia is bad. Kirimajia is even more amazing considering its limitations that it clearly had. But this is a lot of fun. And it's like all the robots are like based on earlier Sentai. So the Dinosaur Man's, whichever one became the first Power Rangers series, he's based on that. And your other ones... Well, actually, I think anyone after that is also based on a Power Ranger, also became a Power Rangers series. But I assume this will be one they eventually get round to Power Rangering.
Right.
Unlike the train one. And various other
people
ones
just aren't that into trains.
Not in America, no.
Not outside Japan, no.
I mean, they don't have like a train going across America for reasons that don't make sense, but yeah.
Yeah.
If they can sell Shinkalian outside of Japan, then Train Rangers is probably going to be World Guider, isn't it?
Anyway, let's give this another go. Tropical Rouge Precure, Episode 3, Believe Yourself, Super Cute Cure Coral.
Okay. Talking.
You
okay.
Good?
We'll clear the fire. very slight one for Cure Coral, which takes place over like a nice Sunday jaunt with Manatsu, Sango, and Peter goes from school, go off nicely out shopping, go to the aquarium. Sango Nora, who's absconded to the aquarium because she's bored. She's like, oh, you're totally a mermaid, not an animatronic. That's kind of cool. It's like, I got back to my friends. And Sango was like feeling like, she wants to express her own little kind of thoughts and ideas about what things you think are cute. Because they're going, penguin, super cute. Like a clown. Super cute. Then Manatsu was going, I like the giant isopod, which is this like deep sea crustacean, a big kind of like worm beetle-y thing that dwells in the ocean floor. It's like, yeah, sure.
I'm not sure this was the best episode for me to start, but I did watch this one and I do agree with her. Giant isopods are fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. And Sango was kind of admire Manatsu can be so kind of forthright with her because the gods like the dugong tank and it's like, oh man, like years ago, it was said like, you know, dugongs were taken for mermaids. Like, they got weird faces, though. Maybe mermaids got weird faces, too. And Sango's like, yeah, same. But she said, no, I've met a real mermaid, and she's super cute and nice. I don't know what I feel about that.
So, and she really, appreciates that in her friend of being able to say, I like this thing, even when all the other friends are like, hey, we don't like that thing. We think your ideas are bad and wrong. Or not bad and wrong, but they don't, like, see eye to eye on everything, and she's still fine with expressing it.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. I was like, oh, like, this just reminds me back in school when everyone was picking, like, tulips for the class project, and everyone picked a pink tube. Mm-hmm. I went for a purple one, but no one else did. And I feel very, isolated. Like, honest, it is all very much, hey, no one really minds or cares, but she just feels like, oh, I want to try and fit in, but sometimes I feel like I'm also distanced that. Ooh. It was giant monster attacks. It is still kind of ropey because it's just a bunch of
cycling. Oh my god, it's a dustbin.
It's a bunch of cycling bins.
It's a three-part bin where like one is like plastic, paper, non-recyclables, that kind of thing.
It's at least launching like empty aluminum cans, like missiles, I suppose.
Yeah, its fireballs are like giant tied bags of trash, basically.
Yeah. So when fucking Kira Summer was like doing a dash and the guy goes, he's just getting nailed by a giant black bin bag been launched at her. But again, Sango was like, I should run away with my friends. And that's a natural reaction to have, the giant rubber spin monster running, stomping around. It's a natural reaction. But something inside of us saying, no, I gotta stay and help. I gotta stay there and do it. And that's the gumption she needs. That's what we need in a pretty cure. So here's, have your compact. Your ring is manifested. You can open it. And you're Cure Coral now. You've got like a costume with a cute little sailor's hat kind of popped askew like that. It's quite nice, actually.
She's got like a big dress as well, which I was like, that's not going to help do flying kicks. That's going to get in the way.
Yeah. Instead of do a dainty up and over, and then the kind of step off the back and let the monster land flat in its face, and just finish it off with a roll move, which is just kind of engulfing the monster in a big web of coral that just grows around us. The barrier reef is fighting back, and it's going to have its revenge on us humans who have destroyed it. And takes it out. It's like, oh, yeah, she's in the fall now. She's feeling like she's part of something as well, and part of something where she's free to, express her own little, ideas about what's cute and what's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're getting a cure papaya this week, and then shortly afterwards, cure flamingo. So we're getting the team out. We're going to go on some adventures. It's still bright and sunny. Laura is still the highlight, I think, for me, because she's such an absolute brat. And they're going on about, she's like, oh, Hermit's got funny faces, right? And just thinking of Laura, her always like locked in that pouch, is just going, I want to go shopping.
They do kind of have a funny face in a different regard, yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering as well in terms of trying to, how the toy properties, the toy Sunday morning power hour properties should be kind of thematically or echoing each other or lining up somewhere. It's just I'm wondering, because the costume so far for the Pretty Cures got them fingerless gloves like the first Pretty Cures had. I wonder if they're trying to make a little nod to that as well, just harkening back to our heritage for the new thing. I'm still having a lot of fun with this. Dwayne, obviously you probably went and watched the preceding ones.
I did.
You didn't. Just hop right in. What's the time? You don't need to. That's the kind of nature of
this
thing.
You've been catching me up for the most part, so I figured I was okay.
Yeah, you'd be able to hop in wherever. But were you enjoying it? What were you feeling with it?
I feel like I was in the same boat as Brian. I was like, I want to see some flying kicks and shit. I do like some of the moves. I think one of my favorite moves is, weirdly enough, her going like the no, and just canceling out the attack with the X, maybe you're throwing the X card with your fingers, basically. I don't know, that was fun to me, just as a defense. It was all right. It was nice and bright and bubbly. I don't think it's really my thing. I'm not sure I'll keep up on it, but I might check out it now again, especially. I'm definitely going to check it out when you make a compilation of all the best fights. but that's maybe cheating. But yeah.
Yeah. There's something in there, I think maybe the action, I think I agree as well. It's maybe not up where I am, where I think it could be, but I can see a potential of where it might go. Because the bad guy's going to figure out eventually, oh, Martins is super lame. We got to upgrade him with something different. And
yeah,
you might see some computer shit after that then.
I'm guessing the joke is, what with the bad guy showing up, is like, I'm not really feeling it today. Bin monster.
Put some effort in, guys.
Yeah, the monsters are being really lazy, and it's fucking showing in the monster design. But it's like, yeah, that's kind of funny, but If you had a monster just in a moping around, it's like, yeah, okay, I guess. Steal your happiness, that kind of thing. But yeah, hopefully they'll get around to more interesting designs down the line.
I'm just endeared enough by what's happening outside of that, what's surrounding it, with the characters as well. It's like, yeah, this is quite pleasant enough. I do not feel all the way shortchanged by going by looking at this. But like I said, we're still putting the team together. I think it'll really kick off once we get them in. Looking forward to Cure Flamingo, because she's just like fun cranking them dumbbells in the opening sequence. I think she'd be fun when we get to her.
I feel like she's the one who's going to have the punchy and kicky moves.
Oh, yeah. For real.
Then it's time for content warning, the anime Kimono Jihen, episode 10, Twins, in which we are introduced to Akira's twin, Yui, and we start to be introduced from the terrible life that Akira has escaped, where there is a mountain, and in this mountain there is a village, and it's full of snow women. And every 100 years, they give birth to a snowman. And this century, they have given birth to twins. And they're, kept, some would say, groomed by the women.
They do literally groom them, wash their hair, feed them each morsel of food.
And but they're not allowed to go and see their dad, who is caged in a hut on the mountain in the village, and you see a gnarled hand reach out through the cage. And then they discover a backpacker's abandoned backpack full of human things, and that makes them fascinated by the human world.
I presume that
world.
Backpacker's dead, right?
I would assume so, yes.
Yeah, like super double dead due to Yuki-onna. But yeah, they're kind of going through the magazine. It's like, wow, this shit is cool as fuck. Yeah, let's go to Tokyo one day. That kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't think we see any more of this yet. I think that'll be coming up in the next episode. I think it might be in a slightly different order in the comic.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone's getting annoyed at Akira because he's being a big old klutz. This is all taking place in the present. My favourite bit is they've got a case where a sandman died at the beach.
And so he's just got several bags of sand. So if you guys could just find which bits are the sandman and which bits are sand, and just like basically go through them. And yeah, obviously, Cabana's kind of like, oh, this is easy. We'll just take out the parts that are sand and throw them the fuck away. And it's like, but that's going to take so fucking long. And Akira's like, hey guys, what's going? Whoa, whoa, whoa. And like spills every bag of sand.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that I would be annoyed at Akira for that as well. I know he's cute and everything, but it's like, come on, dude, fucking.
What do you bring to the team?
Well, that's basically their problem. Akira keeps fucking things up, like dropping plates and just being a real clusterfuck.
But after he's gone, they realize what he brings to the team: domestic skills.
No, it's not only domestic skills. There's two things. Yeah. A, Akira can cook. That's important because none of the rest of them can fucking cook. And if they're not having pot noodles, they're shit out of luck. And B, if nobody else is around here to beat a fuck up, who are we going to fucking complain at? Because that's the thing. They all start like kind of sniping at each other. And it's like, oh, wait, we need the worst one here to
we
be the
need
worst.
Someone
one.
To dunk on to be the scapegoat for all of our woes and personal problems and flaws.
Yeah, and then they don't know what to do to have a good time. It's like you need the clusterfuck fun person who actually knows how to cook. Very important. But yeah, so they appreciate it after. But Akira's done the I'm a kid like with my fucking my bindle sack fucking I'm running away from home, but I'm not really a bindle sack like his stuffed teddy, which is called
Big Brother,
had been damaged somehow. So the vampire fixed it and put an AI in it. So now he has someone to talk to while he's running away from home, like a 5-year-old kind of thing. Just going out of town is like, I should have brought more than loose change. I shouldn't have spent so much on sweets. Why do I spend my paychecks as soon as I get them? A lot of people ask. Wouldn't you know it, he runs into his brother in Brighton town. Oh, fucking lucky.
Small world, huh?
We can now go and live together in a castle I shall make out of ice. Also, I will lock you away to keep you pure.
It's all I know. All I know. I learned it from you.
Because we do see the brother like walking around before this stuff, and he bumps into some, I guess, like drunk college kids or something like that. And I do like to say, have you seen this boy? And it's like a really bad like child's drawing of his brother. And they're like, oh, I don't know, she looks pretty cute. Where's she from? And it's like, oh, yeah, so you haven't seen her? No. And it's like, all right, then die in ice. And it's like, oh fuck, that's bad. But yeah, so that's your first hint that shit's going down. Your second hint is when it's like, okay, Akira, I'll go get you the bits you need, because Akira wants like a. Because the castle is really impressive. It's like an old-fashioned Japanese-style castle. But it's like, I need these specific things. But it's like, okay, I'll go get them. And locks, like a big ice padlock fucking locking them in. It's like, Akira's going like, wait, am I locked the fuck in here?
And smashes his smartphone as well.
Does smash his smartphone. Fortunately, the AI Big Brother alpaca is connected to the internet, has projector eyes. And, you know, you can still do the social media thing. And scroll through your Twitter on that. Because that's how they're initially like, where's Akira? He's like, he hasn't posted in a while. Something must be wrong.
And then they see on the news, oh, there's a giant ice castle. We better go and investigate. And they prevent Yui from attacking the news crew by Inugami summoning his gun and shooting Yui. That makes everyone scatter.
I mean, yeah, that makes them all kind of run pretty quick. Smart people for once, yeah.
They confront, and then Yui comes back in and says, you don't see how the confrontation goes, comes back in and says to Akira.
He does have the little...
the null
thing on it.
Yeah,
he's got like the opposite thing, which would only work if you have like ice powers, but it keeps his heart cold or some bollocks. I'm not exactly.
Yeah, that's what the alpaca notices. Yeah, maybe he's being influenced by something. Because maybe he's not. Maybe he's behaving like this because he's not well. Because I've done a full body scan of him, and his heart appears to be colder than the rest of him. I do like the way the alpaca does not have any knowledge of monster stuff, but because it's an AI. It just presents the unusual to Akira, and then Akira has to make sense of it.
It's just like raw data. It doesn't have an opinion on it kind of thing. But the brother comes back after whatever confrontation happened and goes like, yeah, here's all the things you need. Right, I'll be in the next room if you need me. And Akira's like, oh, cool, he got me the 4-poster bed. And the other things I was like, oh, Jesus, is that all my friends frozen?
Yep, and that's your cliffhanger. Shiki, Inugami, and Kamane are frozen solid. What's Akira gonna do? Find out in the next two episodes. I did read ahead. The flashback gets so much worse.
Bad already. But yeah, okay, great. Good stuff.
Yeah, because the implication is made perfectly clear in the comic. How clear they'll make it for broadcast television, I don't know. Having looked at the comic for the first time, though, they're very long chapters. I guess it might be a monthly comic, but it hits the beats of the comic so well and so quickly. It's watching the anime is a lot like just looking at the comic, as far as I could tell.
That's excellent.
So hopefully it gets more seasons, because these first 12 episodes or 13 episodes, whatever it's going to be, is kind of only just like the setup for the premise. We've not even got to what it's like at the end of this story. We learn what a kimono G-head is.
Yeah, okay.
The phrase has never been uttered as far as I can remember in the series so far.
Obviously they said kimono, but yeah.
Right at the end, we see Inari and your little shit show up, don't we? I think. Or is it the ice? I can't remember if they're there or not.
I feel like we've had a hint of them at some point, but I don't remember.
Maybe my brain's running ahead to where that chapter ended, rather than where this episode ended. But yeah, and that was another episode of Kimono Jihen. Full of terrifying things that monsters do to each other this time, as opposed to humans doing it to monsters.
It's still got a bunch of rapiness in it, so that's great. Really fucked up.
Oh,
can I say looking forward to it? Not really.
But it's very well made.
It is very well made, and I am disturbed by the disturbing shit that they're putting out. Well done.
And it's treated in a way that it's not salacious in the way it's presented.
No, I'm not. I'm definitely not supposed to be like, isn't this erotic? It's supposed to be like, oh, geez, this is fucked right here.
Yeah, it's not even like presented as like, oh, is it? It's not even erotic. Is it not even? It's like, is this shocking? It's not even doing that. It's like,
yeah. The implication of it is enough to make me disturbed, basically.
It was more like fucking like Law and Order SVU style.
It's
just like the nature of these things and all. It isn't like every case we do is a rape or whatever like that, but it has some kind of really, very personal, very kind of harrowing little detail to it like that.
And obviously bringing in all those kind of things and stories in fiction or especially reality are always disturbing, but it's made more so with in this case it's children, and that makes it like fucking 10 times worse, basically.
And you probably know a couple of like the yokai stories, you know, in Kitaro, sometimes you get kind of the cute firm version of that. This is certainly sounds a lot more. The version we got in Kitaro, the Yuki Ono story, was a lot more wholesome and nice and warmer received here when it was down things. But you just think, nothing in any of those yokai stories says that they don't eat or devour or kill children, so maybe,
Also, there's absolutely amazing fights coming up as well.
Oh, excellent.
It will, yeah. Some really, really good stuff. And this has been a fairly... I've not really paid attention as to who's actually making this, because this might be one of the better made series.
It's consistently good as well, yeah.
This season. Because obviously, as much as Skate, the Infinity is great...
I mean, I did watch this week's 0.5 episode just because I was like, yeah, just show me the fucking highlight reel. And I was like, yeah, this is still good looking.
They have apparently come undone because they were doing it with a very small team. That's what I read this week.
Thing that got on paper, they were doing everything right. We got everything sorted in pre-production. We got an idea of what it's going for, but it's hit the upper limit because you had the same people basically doing all of the work every episode, which is why it looks so good, because that means you've had like a consistency of creative input to it. But you got to like rotate that team out. You got to fucking bring in the subs to get the rest of it done. Or it's hitting the wall right now.
Hopefully that doesn't affect it too adversely in the long term, but yeah, like you say, the thing that is its strength is also the thing that is kind of fucking it over, but for sure.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing as well, you know, even for things that are on paper doing everything right, they're still like hitting the wall with these things. They're still looking like we need one eating it, so like something's gotta give with the way the shit that gets made. It's like, it wasn't enough that people fucking have died over it and they still keep going on. Like, what's it going to take to make a change? Don't know.
Okay, it's... The studio is... Aja Doe.
Yeah, they were like only like a...
Nintama Rantaro... Kaiketsu Zori, there's a bunch of adult stuff, but the things they're known for are kids shows.
Chibi Maruko-chan, some Doraemon stuff,
which the director has worked on, Masaya Fujimori.
So is this like their first big thing?
They've done other adult stuff as well. But like I say, the big shows they're known for are the kids' shows.
Last year, I think wherever it was that Kakushi Goto thing, which it was a comedy, which, you know, it wasn't my kind of comedy. It has some good business, but it did look very well too. Maybe that's kind of coming out from... I think this one is the office has been kind of, you know, we've... A lot of kind of cooperation, a lot of like outsourced kind of work for other studios, but slowly building up this like kind of portfolio of drawings that they were like doing the production for it. They were seeing kind of really break out now with this, but this is one I don't see get brought up too much outside of what we discussed here. I think this will be, we may try and like, you know, get a word out about this one, because I think it could be a lot. Well, people's streets, relative different streets.
Mm. Yeah, I'm surprised I don't think the comic's licensed, is it?
No.
Which does surprise me, but...
I think it won't take too much, it won't take too much for it to get licensed. It's often like, you get surprised something like this hasn't been licensed, and...
Mm.
You know, I think... after this first series ends, I would not be surprised if saw an announcement about that getting published over here.
Oh, my worry is it's already been optioned through some people and they're not going to fucking strike while the iron's hot kind of thing.
Yeah.
As happened sometimes, it gets fucking buried. It doesn't it doesn't get going.
No, but it's
unfortunate because it deserves it. Like it's
yeah, but it's Suesho who publishes it, so you would think, don't get up on this shit.
I've just seen Akira and Yui's surname. It is incredibly long. so many syllables. I wouldn't even want to attempt it.
It's getting published in Italian. Maybe there's a big Italian audience who's going to be tuning into this. It's probably just like fire up an Italian search on Twitter or something if I get scores of feedback about this one.
Righty ho, are we back Wednesday, Niall?
I'll be back Wednesday. That's a fine question you ask. We shall be, because I will be awake by then, by Wednesday evening. Okay. Mamma mia.
Righty ho.
Go on.
Let's wrap things up. We say goodbye to the audience. Say goodbye to the listeners after I've edited things a bit more than I have to. normally. And hopefully we'll be back with stronger connections next week for more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Bye. See ya.
Might even treat myself to a new microphone.